Let's move on to agenda item 18, compliance with revised ex parte rules. Mr. Harris?
So as the board may recall, the governor signed, what was it, 96, let me look at my notes. XB 965 last year, which changed the ex parte rules. Our attorney, Jessica Jarr, will give a presentation to educate the board and the public on what those new requirements are and the means by which we will comply with them. Jessica?
Good morning. It's the first time I've gotten to sit on this side for you guys. So I am going to be giving a PowerPoint presentation that Lori Oaken created and has been giving to all of the regional boards, just to let everyone know what the new requirements are as far as ex parte communications now that we have a new law on it. So let's see. So SB 965 became effective of January of this year, and it covers ex parte rules for general orders. It also required all agendas to be translated into Spanish, and it also stated that if any individual is using a translator, then they should get double time during their speaking to the board. So ex parte communications are now allowed for general orders. And so that means orders where there's no name discharge and there no name discharger and there is an enrollment process. It does exclude regional MS4 permits, which isn't an issue here, but it is an issue in other regions where they have one MS4 permit that covers multiple cities. It does include state board petitions of general orders. So in this case, we have petitions on our LID, post-construction stormwater requirements at the state board currently. And since that is for the Phase 2 MS4 permit, which is a general order, board members are able to communicate with state board members regarding those issues. There can be a 14-day hold prior to the adoption, and that is simply where the board members can refuse meetings 14 days prior to the hearing. And
Jessica, excuse me, I just want to, after the presentation, will you email me the slideshow and I can pass it to the board members?
Yeah, certainly.
And that way they can listen and not have to worry about copying everything down.
Yeah. So the purpose of the 14-day hold is simply just to allow board members time to review items without having to have hearings or get testimony that's not appropriate right before a board hearing. It also allows time to get the disclosure form out to the public. The 14-day hold is imposed in the hearing notice. It's not something board members have to do specifically or for each item. It's simply in the hearing notice. OCC typically recommends the 14-day ban on communications just for the reasons I've previously stated. They also, OCC also recommends it if that board item has been continued. So the scope of the exception applies to written or oral communications. Did you have a question?
Yeah, so if the item has been continued, what they're recommending is a 14-day hold before it's next heard?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
So there's no other change to the law. So in, you still have to follow serial meeting requirements. You can't, there can't be an ex parte communication with one board member who then, and that communicator goes to another board member and says, you know, previous board member told me this. It doesn't work that way. Due process also still works, where you still have to keep an open mind and be fair. You know, you can't prejudge anything. You should also provide equal access you know, that so that one party doesn't feel that they've been shut out of the process. It is okay to talk to the communicators about any concerns you have. Just don't make any final judgments. So for the hearing procedures, they still control evidence. You know, if they give you handouts, those are not part of the record. They are not part of evidence. And they will only be disclosed as part of the disclosure form itself. They won't be part of the administrative record.
May I clarify? So if we are handed a report, for example, that addresses the issue specifically, they are required to list the fact that they provided us a copy of said report.
And the report itself.
And the report. Okay. I misunderstood you. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So, I'll get to the disclosure form, but basically the disclosure form will have copies of handouts or notes that they gave you. But that will not be part of the record itself. So if it's a report that they really believe is important and should be part of the record, they should submit it as part of the formal written comments
right,
on that
so
item
that,
as well.
That would make it a two-step process. One, to report the ex parte and the materials shared, and then the second formal comment and submittal of the report to the record.
Right, and if it's important like that, they could have submitted it as part of the public process and just reference it with you, and then it's not necessary to be, you know, a separate disclosure because you'd already have that information.
Right. I could also submit it to the record. Is that true?
No, because it's not part. These ex parte communications are not part of the record itself.
Okay. All right.
Jessica, are you going to, I'm curious, maybe I'm getting ahead of you, but how many board members could attend such a meeting with
you
an individual?
You still cannot have a quorum.
So it's still limited to two. So
yeah.
An individual could meet with two board members at a time.
Right.
Okay.
I would think it would be three. We have a seven-person board.
You could do three. So the limits with three and two, and we had this yesterday, are under Bagley-Keene. If you create a subcommittee, if there are three or more people, it's now a state body that has to follow Bagley-Keene and Open Meeting Act laws. If it's not a formal subcommittee, then you're allowed to have three. Generally, we tend to say two just to be safe, but you can have three, which is why you've had three on the farm tours.
So you confused me with the last statement. So is it two?
You can have three. We recommend two just to be conservative, but you can have three.
And if you have three, are there any additional requirements in terms of notification? And
no.
Okay.
Well, only if you created a subcommittee that had three.
Correct.
Then we have to follow back with
you. And then if it was a subcommittee like that, it wouldn't be. It would have to be noticed, and it would be public process.
Wouldn't be a subcommittee if someone, let's say Mr. Shimmick, wanted to talk to some of the board members, and he got three of us together. That would be a Bagley-Keene
right.
type committee meeting. It would just be an ex-party meeting.
Okay. We called it a workshop.
Well, yeah, but we could only do that in advance, like at a board meeting, and that probably.
And a workshop has to be noticed, and all that other.
Contact.
So the last thing on this slide is site visits. And OCC is still recommending that participants avoid site visits because they always create basically new evidence that you are seeing that are outside of the record. Just by going to a site visit, you're seeing things that are outside of the record. If you still want a site visit, we can notice one. And then it will no longer be ex parte, and so there will not be a problem.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Vice Chair.
Having an informed board, isn't that a good thing?
Yes.
So what's the negative about being more informed through a site visit?
The problem with site visits themselves is that they are evidence that is not in the record, and they can't be disclosed. If you took pictures of everything you saw, then they could be disclosed. But unlike a meeting where you can say, here's what happened and here's the handouts that I got, a site visit, you're going to get evidence that cannot be disclosed easily.
Can't be described.
Right.
Can't really be thoroughly described.
And so, I mean, this only applies when you have an action that would be considered ex parte. So currently, you know, a site visit to the farm is fine, and it's still fine.
So with our general orders,
yes,
could probably create a list for us. I don't know how many we have. As long as a general order is not pending,
correct,
this isn't going to affect us.
Right. It's only for pending items.
So I wonder if you guys should not be reminding us in some list, hey, by the way, these are now pending and the ex parte rules apply. Is that something that you guys could do so that we...
Well, it depends on... I think it's something we could do if the board would like it to only be for general orders, or for everything, because ex parte communications, the prohibition applies to all pending items. And this exception to the prohibition only applies to certain items. So there are still, you know, all individual WDRs or MPDS permits are still, there's still a prohibition against ex parte communications.
Well, does this change in the law? I thought it only affected general orders.
Correct.
So we're still operating under the old system with the all the other situations.
Right, which is the prohibition on ex parte communications.
Right,
right.
Yeah. Right. And I think that's what she's saying is a complete disclosure
to
the board
list,
so that you aren't out there doing things you shouldn't be doing.
Right.
So there's like two parts to the list. There's
sure, makes sense. Mr. Johnston?
Yeah, just an example. Mary Bannister, who heads the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, came and spoke to our board when we met in Salinas last year. I chatted with her afterwards. Since I live in the area, I was interested in taking a look at what they're doing. They're doing some very interesting seawater intrusion stuff. And I got around to arranging it late this last year. And in an excess of caution, I checked with Jessica and was told, well, in May, the wastewater discharge permit covering City of Watsonville and Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, because they have that fourth-stage reclamation plant, is going to be coming up. And so actually for me to tour that site before May, that's not a general order, that's a specific permit, would be a potentially an ex parte violation. So I'm holding off. Okay. So I think the list would be useful because I had no
clue,
and I could as easily have not checked with Jessica because it's a fairly routine thing to just talk to people in the area.
Jessica, what's the definition of pending?
When something is reasonably certain to come onto the
right
agenda and staff is discussing items with the state.
This was 6 months out. So.
There's some time limit that I'm forgetting, too.
Yes, could you look into that for me and let me know?
And I can pull it up.
I'll work with staff to come up with a list, and it'll be a moving list, of course. It'll have to be continually updated, but we can do that.
Right.
If that's what the board would like to see.
Slightly fuzzy because things get pushed back or changed, right. But it will err on the conservative side.
So it'll have the
Actually, that's
all pending items.
Right.
The ex parte rules attached to
it. It probably would. Mr. Johnson's comment, I think, is good. Is to put it online someplace on a page so that the outside parties also know where they are subject to these.
Right. Yeah.
That would be a good idea. Right. Okay.
So if I could just understand. I know that the scheduling and the agendas for hearings are set out pretty far in advance. I don't know how far in advance because I've never heard that time frame. But once it hits that list, to be agendized, would that be one factor?
Certainly.
Yeah.
Or another factor is also if the permit expires and we know we're renewing it.
Right.
It's reasonably foreseeable that it will come
it's
before the board again.
It's a pending item. Right. Right. Okay.
What we don't see is that staff already has a bare bones agenda laid out almost for the next year.
That's what I thought.
They've targeted certain permits that are going to be coming up. We don't see any of that until it actually hits, you know, the printed form or on the website. So, okay. Mayor Delgado.
Yes. We all had a field trip recently to some ag lands. And I guess it would have been said in December that the TMDL was a pending item. So I guess we could have said, don't talk about TMDLs while you're on this field trip. Or anyway, how does that case example relate to what we're talking about?
That doesn't apply to basin plans, right?
Right.
Does not apply to basin plans actions.
Not an order.
Yeah,
not
it's order. It's a different type of order. It's so there's no ex parte communication.
Okay, so
problem.
Earlier I heard that except for general orders, it applies to everything else. Or did I have that in reverse?
Individual orders.
So yes, it applies to like permits, MPDS permits. It applies to
WDRs,
general orders, not basin plan amendments. They're different.
Enforcement actions.
Yes, enforcement actions.
I don't even get to talk about enforcement actions. So, you don't.
So a little short cheat sheet of.
Well, that's what we want her to put together.
Yeah.
And let me just say something to the board as a whole. We really have to adhere to these, you know, prohibitions, these rules. We want to maintain the integrity of our decision making process at all times. We don't want it to be impugned at all. And so we've got to really keep a watchful eye on what we do, you know, who we talk to and the information we receive. So, you know, Russ and I have talked about this over the years, about, you know, when in doubt in a situation that we would just recuse ourselves from participating in something to completely eliminate any question and challenge later from somebody that something improper happened. So let's, you know, keep an eye on this, and the list Jessica's going to maintain for us, I think, will be a great tool. Mr. Johnston. Okay.
So,
Dr. Hunter.
Mr. Johnston just mentioned that there was a memo issued, and I'm trying to remember a memo being written.
A standing memo from the Office of General Counsel regarding ex parte communication.
There is, and it has been updated to include SB 965. And so I can email that out to all the board members again if you'd like.
That would be wonderful. Thank
okay.
you.
Do you have more for your?
I do.
Good. Go ahead.
So the disclosure requirements. Who has to actually disclose? Potential enrollees and their representatives or employees, persons with a financial interest in the order, or representatives acting on behalf of an organization, and that includes any formally organized civic, environmental, neighborhood, business, labor, trade, or similar association who intends to influence the decision of the board member. So how do you know? You ask them. You simply need to ask them if they're speaking on behalf of an organization, and did the organization formally or informally authorize that person to speak on their behalf? And when in doubt, err on the side of caution and ask them to disclose. Other members of the public also are the legislature, if an assemblyman comes and tries to talk to you. So who's responsible for the disclosure? Currently, we are saying that the person communicating with you has the obligation to provide the disclosure to you. The disclosure forms are on the regional board's website up on the front page currently, and they, I believe, will stay on the front page for now. And it's a simple PDF that they can just fill out and provide to you. So what must be disclosed?
So they give it to us, turn it in?
Or they can give it to the regional board, either way. If they give it to you, you'll give it to us.
Yeah, it should be given to staff. You know, I mean, I remember I had to submit it for my ex parte contacts
right.
with the state board members, and they had an email address on there
to submit it to.
My disclosure forms, and it went to like comment letters.
Yeah.
Or disclosure forms.
They have some email addresses
set up for that.
Right, that the regional board doesn't have.
We should set something up like that to make it consistent and easy.
Does the form say anything about where to send them? Or is the form just a
plug? It does.
Yeah, every board has a different form, and
oh, okay.
I don't remember what Region 3's form says specifically.
We'll take a look at it.
The only kind of problem with creating a separate email address to send it to is you just have to make sure someone checks it. So a staff member just has to be an additional responsibility.
Well, what I would suggest is that we have it go to either to me, to the EO, or if eventually when we get an executive assistant who is going to be the clerk to the board, it would go to that individual.
Or the staff person who is handling that permit.
Well, I personally would rather have it to go to a single point.
Okay.
Right. If it's going to the staff person, then you have to change the disclosure form. You never know who it's going to go to,
okay.
basically. So that's been a new issue. So what has to be disclosed is the date, the time, the location, and whether it was written or oral or both. All persons present, including the board members, a description of the content of communications, and all materials, either written, audiovisual, or otherwise. And the board must receive it within 7 days. So if you get it or staff gets it and they feel like it's inadequate.
So 7 days, that means that staff would not normally know that a board member necessarily is talking to someone. So and if it doesn't say that, I would ask the board members to be sure to inform the EO or AEO that you have had such a conversation so that we can basically start the clock and look out for the form.
Yeah, that's my next little thing.
Oh, it is, okay. And then maybe what happens,
okay.
if you could cover what happens if we don't receive it.
Right. So if you receive handouts, save them and send copies to staff or to the EO to ensure that if they don't include them in the disclosure, we can add them to the disclosure. If you look at the disclosure, we'll send it to you and you can look at it. And if you feel like it's inadequate, we'll send it back to them and say, you didn't discuss everything, please add more. If they won't, or if there's no disclosure made, it's up to you at the board meeting to disclose the ex parte communication. There are sanctions for egregious conduct only. So generally, if they don't do it, you have to disclose, and only if it's really, really bad will something bad happen to them.
Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, I'm just looking at our current form on our website, and it says, unless the board member provided you with a different contact person, please send your materials to, and there's Cindy Jones's email address.
Oh, that works.
Of course, that assumes that they have the ability to scan stuff.
Well, they could also mail it too, right?
Right.
Is there a mailing address on there?
No, there's no mailing address and there's no fax number.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll correct that then.
We can add that, I think.
Yeah.
So once we receive it, then it gets posted on our website and emailed to the LIRIS list for that order so that everyone knows about the communication. It is in the administrative record for that order for documentation purposes only. It's not part of the evidence, as we've already discussed. So if you have any questions, you can go to this main webpage that talks about ex parte communications, and don't use that form, because that form's not the one you should use.
So, again, if a board member calls and says, I've met with so-and-so, and I met him on day one, and then day eight comes, and we haven't received anything, what's the obligation of staff or the board member in terms of follow-up? Or what do we do at that point? Do we report this to someone, or?
Well, we don't have to report it to anyone. At that point, we're not required to follow up with them to make the disclosure, but I would advise it. If they still do not, then the board member needs to make that disclosure at the board meeting.
And I'm not sure if I missed it or not, but when we get the materials, those have to be posted online?
Right, and emailed out on the LIRIS list.
For the item that is?
That is being communicated about, yes.
Okay. So I want to point out that does increase staff's workload. This is an additional workload on staff. So I could see where, if we had an important item before the board and lots of people wanted to talk to you, it could generate a fair amount of paperwork and a fair amount of work on staff.
And there is no requirement for you guys to accept the meetings. You do not have to do so. There is just no longer a prohibition against doing so.
In addition, Jessica mentioned the requirement now for Spanish translation. I know I've mentioned that before, and this was the first agenda that was translated. We're required to provide the basic, or the, you know, just the agenda to Chico State 30 days before the board meeting now. We can make some adjustments to it, so that puts additional constraints on staff in terms of, so what we are trying to do is the management group is working to get ahead of this and set in place some protocols and some calendars to try to get ahead of that, because, for example, we have to have the March agenda ready by February 14th or 15th or something. We only have a couple weeks after this meeting to get the next agenda ready so that we can get it translated in Spanish. So I recall our discussion about every board meetings every other month, and somehow they seem like they're almost every month in terms of preparation now.
Mr. Johnston.
It's a couple thoughts on the translation. One is it should certainly be doable to get to have regularly scheduled someone who will do translation of a three-page document with a 1 or 2 day turnaround. That's not very complicated.
We have no choice. This is a state contract with Chico State.
And this covers all the boards?
All the regional boards and the state board.
That's not very efficient.
Any more questions?
Dr. Hunt.
Regarding the Spanish translation, you mentioned that if a translator is used, the comment time is doubled.
Right.
In our case, considering 3 minutes is the usual time, so that
would be six.
Yeah, and so that probably is something that should also be on the website in some fashion to inform people who require translation. But I'm also wondering, I know we have bilingual staff. Are we able to utilize their talents or offer assistance?
No.
No.
We checked into that. We must go through Chico State.
Well, no, I'm saying during a hearing.
At the board meeting.
At the board meeting.
Yeah, I think so, because they're being paid a small amount of money on
a
top
bonus
of their base salary for all of the staff. Have you used either Monica or
Yes,
before?
I know they have.
Okay.
Monica, I know, has. So, again, it could be very important on our website in Spanish that it say, you know, if translation is required, or if translation would be of assistance to participate in a meeting, something along those lines, that those accommodations can be made in advance so that people are on notice that we have those talents here, staff.
Yeah, I think there actually is already something in the agenda, but I believe it's in English, so translating it into Spanish might be useful.
I'll look into that.
Yeah, but I think putting on the website too, because typically the folks that come before us that have this language barrier are usually working with an organization, and they try to bring their own folks to translate, but that could facilitate bringing those comments into the hearing process.
Okay. Mr. Jordan, Mr. Jeffries,
so, Wolf. On that cheat list you're going to put together with the categories of when and if, can you also, is it possible also to provide a written definition of pending?
Certainly. It's a legal definition. I can look it up. I just don't remember it. But
and then is it like just too weaselly to even get a heads up when stuff is anticipated to be pending, so we like a pre-pending kind of notice?
Well, you know, like with many permits, they come up every so many years.
Right.
And so, I mean, we know that they're going to start to hit staff, stakeholder discussion at some
right.
point, like a year out maybe, whatever. I think it depends on the permit.
Yeah,
it is possible to get that.
Okay.
That does exist. It's amorphous, I would think, right? It depends on the permit, the order, and what staff
doing. Time.
Yeah.
If the board, I mean, I think what we can do is, as we develop these materials, we'll bring them back to the board, and we can either put it on as a, you know, an information agenda item so that it can be discussed separately until we get things finalized to your satisfaction.
I mean, the safe thing to do is, if someone contacts you and they want to talk about something, check with staff first to see if it's pending.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
And just tell them that you'll get back to them if you, once you determine whether it's an item that you can talk to them about.
Right. Mr. Jeffries.
Well, Mr. Jordan kind of touched on, I don't want to call it a cheat sheet, but I think there should be an information sheet that we could follow. And a lot of the general public won't understand why we have to do this or why we don't have to do it. For us that's been in local politics, you normally, when you have a constituent call you just immediately meet with them 90% of the time.
I know.
And that's where it gets confusing. I remember I kind of coached Mayor Delgado when he first got on the board to be careful, because I've been through that, and that was one of the most frustrating things when I first arrived on this board, was to have people call me and talk to me, want to talk to me about a certain item. And then I found out very quickly from the board attorney that I can't do that, and I was totally frustrated, as well as my constituent. So I would appreciate that information that we can give that individual or individuals that information, so they understand what we're doing and how we're doing it. And I think the cumbersome, you know, this law or rule was supposed to make this process more simple, but it's obvious it's made it more complex and more confusing for not only board members but also the general public.
Actually, Russ, it wasn't to make it simpler, it was to give access. The complaint was,
well, I understand the complaint
public
was
can't even access
that
access.
That's right, but now there's several barriers that even prevents that access, like filling out the forms, make sure the information's forward and so forth. And normally people would contact you and spend maybe 15 or 20 minutes with you, and then you tell them, did you fill out the form and send it in, because of the ex parte contact. That's going to cause a problem. And I'm a kind of guy that likes to hear everything from everybody. And that gives me a better idea what's really going on. And more information I have, the better opportunity I make to make a sound judgment decision when it gets to the board. And so I was hoping that this process would be a lot simpler than it is, but it isn't. It's going to make it probably more difficult for the board members and the general public.
What I would actually recommend is, at the beginning of the communication, when you realize it is an ex parte communication that will need to be disclosed, is let them know. Because there
Absolutely.
May be some parties that would rather not disclose a communication, and so they may not want to make that communication. Because once they do, it has to be disclosed.
Well, I my policy has always been, one, to call the board attorney, whoever that happens to be, and see, you know, and explain to them what the question is and can I do this. The second was to inform the executive officer so they will know staff-wise. And it's kept me out of hot water, I think, for the last 20 years anyway. I think it has. I don't know for sure. But thank you.
Okay. Dr. Wolf, then Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, in regard to the Spanish translation during testimonials, etc., perhaps a place to include this is in the conduct of meetings and hearing procedure, which is part of a boilerplate attached with every meeting.
Right.
And then since it is acknowledging, you know, bilingual communication, perhaps this little document should actually be in Spanish. Otherwise,
right. Typically, the only part of the agenda that's in Spanish is actually the board items, and all the language that goes along with it is not. But we could work with that paragraph specifically in making that bilingual or in Spanish, and that wouldn't change from meeting to meeting. So if we get it done once, we're good.
That way, close the loop on getting everybody up to date.
Okay, Mr. Johnston.
Well, two comments. One, following up on Dr. Wolf's comment, it seems like it might make sense to translate the whole couple-page section on conduct of meetings. We do it once, and we never have to do it again because that doesn't change. Because it's a kind of a confusing thing we do here to us, let alone everybody else. Second, just a question: are we obligated to provide Spanish translation by the law?
Yes, if there's a request for translation, I believe we're obligated to give it.
Okay, but we're not obligated to provide a certified translator.
I actually think we are.
And it's not just Spanish.
Right.
So are our people certified translators? I would.
No. I'm not sure about the certified. We are obligated to provide a translator, and if it's a language that staff does not speak, then we will bring a translator in.
Okay.
But if a person is is receiving some kind of a bonus, or I don't know what the right word would be, but if their salary shows a differential because they have this additional skill. I had this when I worked for the City of Los Angeles many years ago. I had to go and take a test. I had to do, a verbal interview with a Spanish language professor at Cal State Long Beach. And once I did that, I was considered to be a bilingual staff. So I think it may be something along those lines. It may not be certified, which is an independent consultant who, you know, who's offering translation services, but something along those lines. Lisa, thank you.
I just think we should look into it. Our staff are not trained to be on-the-fly interpreters, nor am I convinced that they feel confident to do that. That's why, even though they can spend numerous hours conversing fluently with somebody on the phone or translating documents, that they take their time to translate. That's what they are doing, and that's what we're paying them extra for. I'm not sure about the actual interpretation, during a meeting, that's an expectation or that they're qualified to do it.
Okay, so if I might finish.
Go ahead.
Are people required to give us some notice if they need translation?
Yes, it's in the agenda package.
Okay.
That on one of the pages it does say.
Yeah. And I can fill in a pinch and help translate too. I'm not the best or the worst at it. But.
Okay, I have one speaker card, Mr. Shimek. I will have the card once he hands it to Mr. Thomas, but I know that
stay there, please.
He has it in his hand. Okay.
So obviously this is really important. Steve Shimek, the Otter Project, I hate speaking this much, actually. So is it, do I have to disclose if it's a general, a waiver, do I have to disclose?
Yes, a waiver counts.
General permit, do I have to disclose?
Yes.
A named permit I do not?
A named permit, you are still prohibited from having ex parte communications. This only applies to general orders.
So if
I can make it clear, generally the prohibition on ex parte communications still stands. This
right.
is an exception for general orders.
Right. So let's say Acme Wine Company is moving from the named permit to the general permit. Do I have to disclose?
Yes, you would have to disclose.
Can I have that communication?
Yes. If you have to disclose, you can have the communication.
But it would probably be agendized at that point, right? So then it wouldn't be allowed anyway.
No, it's allowed as long if it's agendized, unless there's a 14-day ban and it's within that 14 days.
So let me correct one thing. You said that there were no regional MS4 permits. The Monterey regional is a regional permit. So
the phase two.
Phase two.
Sorry, I was mentioning meaning phase one, because certain other regions have regional phase one permits.
Wow. Okay.
Sorry.
So phase two.
Phase two is a general permit. It's a statewide general permit, and so
okay.
that would fall under this.
So this issue of the pending, I think, is really important,
mm-hmm.
But I'm actually scared of it. Just because the reality is that I think that, I mean, let's face it, that's the area, I mean, to be honest, and this is maybe bad, I don't know, but that's the area Gail Delahant and I work in, right, is when we know it's kind of out there.
When it's pending. It's not on the agenda, but it will be.
It's not on the agenda, but we know that someday it will be, and so that's
why we're going to provide a list, though.
Yeah.
So I think we've agreed here today is to we're going to live by a list that we will generate and keep updated.
Yeah, but the list is should probably go by the law, which has hopefully that time period versus
we will
what
use the the definition.
There's
versus what is kind of perceived, because every discharger has to come up sometime, and we all know that. So, you know, the global list of a loose definition of pending is, frankly, everyone.
Well, Jessica's going to provide
right.
the legal definition
right.
for pending, and we'll go by that.
And
we have to.
It is loose. There isn't just a specific within 1 year of the expiration of a permit. It is generally more broad. However, not everything is pending. So
I'm cognizant of this. One last thing. I don't understand why site visit would not include a farm tour when we frankly need
some. Yeah. So currently the ag order is not pending.
Yeah.
And so there is no prohibition on ex parte communications. The prohibition on ex parte communications only applies when an item is pending. The ag order has been finalized. It is no longer pending. And so therefore,
I see the logic.
And if once the state board rules on the ag order, it may create a pending item for this board.
Yeah.
If they remand it.
It could.
Boom. Right
no,
there.
Thank you. I now see the logic. I didn't
right.
understand the logic. So
right.
Good. And what I hope is, so you've been really good at telling them, I hope that there's guidance, and maybe I have missed it, because it is important to me. I hope there is guidance for the public as well on how to do this. Yeah, and my last question very quickly is, what happens if a board member attends a presentation I give? In other words, that could be, on a pending item, like let's say the ag order. And let's just say that I'm giving a presentation. And the reason that I'm worried about this is that not so much currently, but literally I have, when I was giving presentations on the ag order, I had one of agriculture's lawyers come down and sit in the front row and take notes of literally everything I said. And it was pure intimidation, but I could see it coming up, if there's a board member in the room, I have no idea, and all of a sudden they claim that it's an ex parte communication. And so I'm concerned about things like that. I've been in a room with Mr. Johnston on things about the ag order. It was after the ag order was passed, so that's good. But I can see situations that are very gray where
it could be. Well, of course. Are you talking about a pending item?
Yeah.
Well, if it's a pending item, then there's the potential for that ex parte communication to take place inadvertently in your presentation.
Right.
Right, Jessica?
Yeah, and that's definitely a gray area. And I generally err on the side of caution, and so in that case, I would say the board member would be better off filling out a form saying, I went to this, this is what was said, and disclosing it.
And I guess what I'm hopeful of, and I hope we can just, it doesn't have to be formal, but if a board member attends meetings such as this on a pending item, I would hate for the burden to be on the presenter, because sometimes we're presenting to large audiences. I would hope that the board member would disclose. I recognize that formally the burden is on the person, but that could be hard, right? And I could see the situation where we get accused of an impropriety and we didn't even know it happened.
Mr. Johnston?
I attended a conference at CSUMB actually that dealt in some part with the ag order the day before I was appointed to this board. And it turned out to be a retroactive ex parte communication, which I reported at the hearing on the ag waiver. But I would have, and had I already been a member of the board, it would have been an ex parte violation at the time for me to go to that conference. I should have got up and walked out of the room when they started talking about it, were I a board member. But now, as I understand it, in that same situation with a pending item, if I'm in a conference where they're talking about it, I can stay. And probably, I was thinking the same thing that you were, Jessica, probably where there's not it's not really an individual communication, I should probably just fill out a form and any materials I picked up, attach them to it, and
that's what I would recommend.
And Jessica, that would include trying to get a copy of the presentation.
If possible, if there is one.
And I had two questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
My mind went blank. Oh, I wanted to comment that we have some staff here, but we don't have everyone. Next week, we have a staff, all staff meeting, and I think everyone needs to have this kind of discussion and education on this item. So I think what we'll do is we'll agendize that for the staff meeting and do a WebEx with Jessica. We'll try to schedule Jessica to do a WebEx presentation to all staff so that they have the same information.
Thank you, Mr. Shimek. Mr. Jordan.
So, Jessica, if there's a TMDL that's being worked on down in Santa Maria.
Right.
And they've had public outreach meetings. Is that a pending item yet?
It is. However, there's no prohibition against ex parte communications.
Okay. Now, let's say there was.
Uh-huh. So,
and is attendance at our own staff's outreach meetings an issue for a board member?
No.
Okay.
That would be, those are typically public, publicized meetings.
Mm.
And we noticed them. They're a noticed staff meeting. And we had discussed this before where I think we were going to use standard language that says a quorum of the board may be present, but no action will be taken, because this issue came up before, I think, with Mr. Johnson, and we were just trying to, it would just, we put that language in and we're covered.
Okay.
They're also not one of the individuals that asked to disclose.
Those are maybe some of the kind of helpful examples. It would be good on that, not a cheat sheet.
I think one thing you could put into this sheet you're going to create that has the pending items, just some note as to the types of things that are not included in ex parte prohibitions whatsoever, like TMDLs,
the adjudicatory
and other
items,
basin planning matters like that, just so everybody understands the distinctions between
no the the legislative items versus adjudicatory.
What's that?
It's a difference in whether it's quasi-legislative
exactly.
or quasi-adjudicatory.
Exactly. But without using those terms,
yeah.
use the common names that we are familiar with. Okay. Lastly, before we get off this item, this 14-day hold, how are we going to apply that? Is this going to be on a case-by-case basis?
It's in the hearing notice, so it's always on a case-by-case basis. The board doesn't have to take any formal action. However, the board can decide today if they'd prefer. We just always want to have a 14-day hold.
Okay. So we've made that decision that we will have a 14-day hold on any general orders that are pending.
Right.
Okay.
You can choose to have the 14-day hold. OCC recommends it, but the board can decide whether or not they'd like to do so.
And I think the reason for that is I think it's going to make everything very, very complicated with as you get closer and closer to the board meeting.
Right.
Things
right.
get very, very, very busy, and then we're going to have to be trying to post this stuff, and
right.
The logistics just get to be nearly impossible.
Okay, great. There's no other discussion on this item. We can thank you, Jessica, for the update. And do we need to take a break, you guys, before we go to the next item? Okay. I hear a couple of yeses.
Yes.
So this is where the minority rules on this. Okay, we'll take a break for about 10 minutes or so, and we'll resume with agenda item 19.